Hi, this is Brennan Davis from Bedrock Games and the Bedrock blog, and I'm doing another Q&A. And today, I had mentioned in the previous podcast that there were certain rules that I just don't really use that much anymore in Wandering Heroes of Ogregate. And somebody asked me what specifically, you know, those rules are. And I'm going to try to answer that today. I'm going to just simply go through the book and, you know, pick out rules. And if they look like rules I don't use, I'll talk about them. It's not like I have a catalog of rules that I've written down that I don't use. I just know that there are rules within the game that I don't use or I don't use as much anymore. I'll use them sporadically. So just going through the character creation section, one thing that stands out that I don't really rely on that much anymore is reputation. Reputation is a rule that I think is a good rule for the game. So it's not a rule that I advocate people not using, and it's not a rule that I would remove from the game if I were to put out a revised version. I think it's actually a very well-designed reputation system. I really like it. But the issue is, it just, for whatever reason, after about 2 or 3 years of playing, I just didn't have as much interest in it as a GM, and it just sort of fell by the wayside. It was just one of those things. I think there's just sort of a natural evolution of gameplay that happens when you're running a game for a long time, and you realize, okay, I don't really need to emphasize this rule because my plate is filled with all these other rules. And it, you know, and also it has to do with not just what's best for the game, but what's best for your table. If I had 6 players who were all really into the reputation thing, then that would be a different matter. But for the most part, we're generally content to focus on other things. But that isn't to say that I wouldn't use them. Like, I might sit down one day and say, oh, I really want to emphasize the reputation rules again. Because again, I did like them. I thought they were very elegant, the way that we designed them. Another thing that I would probably at least revise, I don't know. I'm not so thrilled with the combat techniques anymore. I don't think, and again, those are separate from the kung fu techniques. The combat techniques are on page 67 of Wandering Heroes of Ogregate, and they're things that you take that basically enhance your abilities in other areas. So, like, if you take a combat technique for arm strike, you could take Fist of Steel, or you could take Outside Fighter, and Outside Fighter would give you it gives you a +1d10 to your damage roll in certain circumstances. So if you're basically fighting from the outside, and Fist of Steel effectively makes you effective at using your arm strike in terms of damage. I don't, because there's a muscle penalty that's normally associated with it. When we designed the game, I think it seemed really important to balance that out. In hindsight, I think you can just let everybody do arm strike without a penalty. I don't really see the issue these days. So I would be inclined to probably, you know, if I were to revise it, I'd probably just take out combat techniques. Now, that said, I do use combat techniques because players like them. I'm just not, I guess the thing is, I'm not super enthusiastic about them anymore. So it's maybe a misnomer to say I don't use them. It's just that I'm not as adamant about them these days. So then, you know, a lot of the other stuff, just going through the rules, I use open damage, I use extra wounds, I use incapacitation and dying rules. Prepared strike is a thing that I like, but again, I don't see many people employ it. I think because kung fu techniques are so, they're so involved. At the same time, I think stuff like that, even though it's been a while since I've seen a prepared strike at the table, not like years, but just a little while, I think you still need those in the system. So I like having things like that and targeted strike and all that stuff. I like the maiming rules. I've always liked the maiming rules. Surprise I like. I think the charging rules, I don't know. I'm sort of on the fence with those. I don't know that we necessarily need charging rules for Wandering Heroes of Ogregate. I don't really use them that much. I don't think I've had players use them that much. I don't know, maybe people like them being there, so I'd be reluctant to really tweak them, but I can't recall the last time I saw charging used at the table. Let's see here. Lifting, moving objects. I mean, I like the lifting and moving objects table. I do think if we could simplify it, it would be better. But I think that they're, I mean, it's a fairly sound table. That's one that we've kind of tested over a long period of time. And I don't really have any big issues with it except for its complexity. But I will admit that it comes up a lot. Not a lot, but it comes up in play. And so I don't think that, even though that's one that doesn't come up all the time, it's probably nice that it's there. I think, you know, again, Ogre Gate is just more of a rules medium to heavy game. So I think that sort of thing probably needs to be in there. Beast Strength, I always thought was a good part of the system. It doesn't come out quite as much in Ogre Gate. Maybe it's one of those things that should be exploited more by Kung Fu techniques, actually, now that I'm thinking about it. But Beast Strength, I think, is a good concept. And it's a really clever way around some of the inherent limitations of the system itself. Falling Damage, I use. Fire Damage, I use a lot. Illumination, I don't really cleave strictly to this anymore. I used to. But now I just tend to do ad hoc penalties or bonuses based on what seems right for the situation. You know, again, if a player says, hey, it's dim in here, should there be a penalty? I'll certainly do it. But if I were to do it again, I would probably make the illumination stuff a lot simpler. I think we kind of went a little crazy with that. Suffocation and Drowning, I use. That comes up a lot because, especially because certain techniques use it. But I think that, I don't know, I think that works actually. Suffocation and Drowning, that comes up periodically. And it's a pretty sound system because when it's come up, it functions as it's intended to. So let's see. And some of these things I'm going to skip over because they're either obvious or not that important. The Martial World and Kung Fu. I mean, I all that stuff is important in terms of the sect and the Sifu. Now, I do use these things a little differently depending on individual campaigns. If you look at my sandbox thing on the Bedrock blog, I kind of talk about how at the start of every campaign, I do kind of say, okay, I'm going to really emphasize this rule or not this rule, or I'm going to do things this way in terms of XP. So I always give myself, I figure because, I made the game, I can adjust things as I want before a campaign. Reputation, again, I guess that, reputation. I like reputation a lot. I thought it was very elegant to sort of have this idea of there's a way that you're perceived by people that are your friends, and there's a way that you're perceived by people who are your enemies. And those things can be the same, but they can also be different. And I really like that. And we made heavy use of it in the start. It's just that now I don't really use it as much anymore. But again, if the players were like, hey, we really want to use reputation, I'd be fine with it. Martial disciplines, obviously we use. Disciplines and imbalance rating. I mean, this stuff all, again, if there were a way to simplify it, that would be great. But I think this stuff all works, and we use it. Let's see. Creating new techniques. I mean, I'm a little bit more free form with some of this stuff now. Imbalance points and possession. So I still use the Chi Spirit table. I'm not 100% sure how I feel about that these days. If I were to go back, I might do it differently. I might do something more like Chi Deviation from Righteous Blood, Ruthless Blades. In fact, I wonder if you could just kludge that on, because it's not, the systems aren't that different. But I might try that in an upcoming game, because I really like the Fire Deviation rules in Righteous Blood, Ruthless Blades, and I prefer them to the Chi Spirit thing. The Chi Spirit thing works fine. I don't know how many people have noticed this, but again, this is kind of a very obscure point to make, but it's relevant to this. So let me explain it. If you go to the front page of the book, like the title page, and oh man, my hardcover is starting to go a little bit, but you go to the front title page, and it gives the name in Chinese characters. It gives the Wandering Heroes of Ogre Gate title, and then it gives a literal the Mystic Realms Wandering Hero legend, which is kind of like the literal translation of the Chinese characters. The whole point of that, the reason that it looks that way, is I was trying to emulate what you see if you're watching Wuxia or Kung Fu through translation on a dubbed or a subbed film. And I wanted to kind of give that thing where sometimes you get this one title that's all poetic, and then sometimes you get like this like very literal translation that isn't necessarily the same as the more poetic sounding title. And the point of that was to say that this is an emulation of a genre through translation. And so a lot of this stuff is going to be the kinds of things that sort of like, and again, this is maybe less the case now, but just growing up, you would watch these movies and something would be translated in a really wonky way. And, but it would kind of add an interesting dimension to the movie. It's almost like its own, it's almost like it is its own fan subculture in a way. And so I wanted to lean into that. And so the Chi Spirit is part of that, because when I first encountered Fire Deviation, it was in a series where they described it as the guy overtraining and then being taken over by a demon. And, you know, which I thought was really cool, but that wasn't quite what it was intended to be, I don't think. Again, I'm you know, I think I've seen more accurate translations of that particular scene, but also in general, you know, it's more like of a you know, a meridian issue with your internal chi flow. And so I, you know, so the chi spirit reflect that, and I kind of like that fact. But I think these days I might be more inclined to do the fire deviation table. So yeah, so let me see what else is in here. I mean, the profound and the immortal rules I use. We don't really do too many immortal type campaigns. Profound masters are definitely prevalent in my campaigns, because I've found that even though I originally envisioned the game as levels 1 through 6, really you kind of need that 1 through 8, 1 through 9 range to get a real good, robust variety of opponents that are challenging. I wouldn't do this because the game is made, but if I were to remake the game, I'd probably do it closer to how we did Righteous Blood Ruthless Blades, where it'd be more of a level 1 through 9, 1 through 10. And then if I wanted to have profound or immortal stuff, that would be a separate thing. But again, you know, the stuff is present. We've had characters go up to the mountain and join profound sects and try to become immortals and all that stuff. But the game is definitely not as developed in that area. So I tend to focus more on the my preferred range of play for Ogre Gate is, again, like really between levels 1 through 9, I would say. So, I mean, what you saw in Righteous Blood with those blades is kind of largely where I contain most of my games these days when I'm running a campaign. Poisons. We do use poisons, but I tend to use a much more simplified approach these days. So I'll use the standard poisons, but if you look at the poisons that have come out since, I don't really rely on this sort of rigid format anymore, and I will just kind of describe in the individual poison entry what happens and how to manage it. I think that in the end works better. There was a reason why the poison table was like this, but I think that I've kind of moved on from it being that way. So if I revise the game, poison would be something that would get one of the biggest changes, I think. And disease, again, I'd probably do something similar. I do kind of like the disease more than the poison, but again, yeah, that would be, but again, I should emphasize, I do use those rules. If Hellbore comes up, I use the Hellbore rules. It's just that if I invent a new poison, I'm not going to cleave to that particular format that the Hellbore was devised under. Simply because I find it a little too rigid to get the result I want. Cricket fights. I use cricket fights a lot. I use those a lot, actually. I love cricket fights. And I think that you can extend cricket fights to all kinds of things in the game. Armies in War I also use modified versions of it. That's one that's, I always see that as a work in progress. So I use it, but I sometimes tweak it depending on what I'm trying to do. And I also have a variety of methods. If people look at War of Swarming Beggars or, what's the other one? Sons of Lady 87. There's stuff in there that kind of gets into similar territory. So Kung Fu techniques. Stances. I really like the concept of stances, and obviously they do come up. But I think that, I don't know. I don't know how I feel about them anymore. Like, I mean, we use them in the game, but you can probably tell I don't really invent them that much anymore. And I think it's because I don't know. I think people don't tend to use them as much for whatever reason. I mean, they will come up. I have seen people use them enough, but they weren't as big in the game as I thought they were going to be. But I still do use them. I mean, these techniques, some of the techniques I avoid, some of them I use. It depends on the technique. But yeah, these are all, you know, again, I really like the techniques that have been kind of devised post core rulebook personally, but these are all, there's some very essential techniques in here. And I use all of the martial discipline techniques. So let's see. And then I guess that gets us well beyond the rules. So if there's anything I've forgotten, which there probably is, I didn't really go through the individual skills, so maybe I'll take a moment to go through these and see if there's anything I don't quite use in the same way these days. So just looking at the skills, I mean, I do use them somewhat as written, but I'm a little bit more off the cuff when I apply them a lot of times, simply because I'm trying to run the game quickly. But again, I do use the skill rules. And a lot of times what I'll do is I'll occasionally, you know, if like a skill comes up and it's like not on the top of everybody's head how it's used exactly, I'll tend to prefer to just run it how it seems best to do in that moment. But then I might go back to the skill later to see how accurate we were. Because I like the game to keep moving. I think these are all pretty, you know. I guess another thing is optional races. So sometimes players will really want to play an optional race. I would say usually Jiren are the most common one. I don't like players taking the optional races. I try to avoid it. But players can be really into them, so I'll allow it. I think they are pretty clever, some of them. I like the optional races. But I just prefer my Wandering Heroes of Watergate campaigns to be human-centric. I prefer not to have monsters as player character options. My personal favorite has always been the Katheri. I always thought they were interesting. You know, they actually came originally from, I think, a Sartorius thing I put up on the blog as a concept, and I really like them. Yeah, and the Jiren are popular for, I think, obvious reasons. But they're a pretty cool race. I just, again, I will use them if my feet are put to the fire, but I really don't like using the optional races. I prefer to use the standard, you know, human, and then you can pick your ethnic group from within the humans. You know, the game takes on a very different character. If you have a Jiren in the party, it just takes on a different character. You're playing a different kind of campaign than if they're not. And if you look at the core material, there are hints that the game used to have a greater prevalence of that kind of thing in it, but I really stripped that out because I just didn't like it. So by the time I was really running heavy playtests in Orgate, there it really was almost all human. Like there's like, I think I'd have to go through the book and look at it again, but like there's a situation in the Banyan region where there's like a group of, I think, I forget which type of monster, but some kind of bird humanoid that's involved in like, oppressing a town or something like that. I can't remember the precise details, but that's the kind of thing that would have been when I very first started, Ogregate and developing the world. That kind of stuff was all over the place. And players like that because it's fantasy and it's, you know, it's sort of easy to grok and all that. And so maybe I should have done more of that. I don't know. But I ended up really minimizing that a lot more. There's still plenty of supernatural stuff, but I just didn't like quite as much of that stuff in it. That particular strain of fantasy, we'll say. So I don't know. I hope that answers the question. You know, I do use all the flaws. I'm just looking at the flaws now. The flaws I like, I think the flaws work. I've always liked the white hair flaw. That seems to attract at least one out of every 10 players, I would say, seem to like taking the white hair flaw. My one problem with it is I think when everybody starts taking it like that, then it kind of cheapens it. It's, you know, it really should be a real once in a while kind of thing. But I do like it. I like the white hair. You know, again, the bride with white hair was a really big influence on the game. There are other characters that also have that issue in the genre. And I actually have a family member whose hair went white at a very young age because of something that happened, like a car accident or something. I can't remember. But I've always kind of been fascinated by that, too, just that some very stressful situation could turn your hair white, and then it would have this effect on your personality as a martial hero in the setting. So I've been going on way too long. you know, I'll be back on with more Q&As, and I hope this answered the question. If not, I'm happy to take another crack at it if people have specific questions about specific mechanics or follow-up questions. But that's my overview of the mechanics that I'm either not using or I'm just not super enthusiastic about. And as you can probably tell, I have ideas and thoughts about what I would have done differently now if I were to go back and just start over from the beginning. Not that I'm going to do that, because again, it would be the big thing is it would be, I mean, I just don't have the budget for that sort of thing right now. It wouldn't be feasible. And also, it's a really big undertaking. I don't want to have to do another 500-page book at this point. I'm done writing mammoth books, and I'm down to smaller books now. So anyways, I will let you go, and I will talk to you later.